Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, October 31st, 2022. Coming up this hour,
the S&P 500 enters the last trading day of October, up almost 9% for the month.
Investors await this week's Fed decision and jobs report.
Barclays trading revenue jobs estimates. We'll speak with the bank's CEO.
And in Brazil, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva wins the presidential election.
The man accused of attacking the husband of House Speaker Pelosi will be charged today. Plus, South Korea mourns after a crowd crush kills more than 150 people. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshower in sports. The Jets and Giants four-game winning streaks both came to an end. The Knicks lost. The Rangers and Devils both won.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good Monday morning. I'm Amy Morris.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are moving lower this morning. We're coming up to 6:01 on Wall Street. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are down 20 points. Dow futures down 140. NASDAQ futures are lower by 81 points. The 10-year Treasury is down 13 30 seconds now. The yield 4.06%. Yield on the two-year 4.49%. NYMEX crude is down 1.1% or 95 cents at $86.95 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.2% or $3.30 at $16.41.50 an ounce. And the euro right now, Amy, is trading at 0.9940 against the dollar.
Nathan, stocks enter the last day of the trading month in rally mode. The S&P 500 gaining almost 9% in October. The Dow Jones Industrial Average has surged to more than 14%. Michael Sheldon is Chief Investment Officer at Hightower RDM Financial Group.
The Dow is the first of the major indices to move back above their key 200-day moving averages. So that's something a lot of investors watch, separating a longer-term rally versus a short-term rally. None of the other major markets have done that, but that's certainly something to monitor going forward.
Hightower RDM Financial Group Michael Sheldon also notes the S&P 500 is on its longest weekly winning streak since August.
Well, investors have two potential market-moving events this week, Amy. The Fed makes an interest rate decision on Wednesday, and the government issues its monthly employment report on Friday. Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
Economists see another jumbo U.S. rate hike, 75 basis points, to stop red-hot inflation. Consumer psychology, a key to snapping a price breakout, suggests the Fed has its work cut out. Americans see the cost of living rising 5% over the next year based on University of Michigan data. Turning to America's labor market, economists anticipate an October payroll gain, but not as robust as September. The unemployment rate will probably remain low amid historic labor shortages in many industries. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinnie. The end of the Fed's campaign to raise interest rates is approaching. That's the word from Mike Wilson. He's the Morgan Stanley. Was a prominent stock market bear who correctly predicted this year's slump in equities. Wilson says indicators, including the inversion of the yield curve between 10-year and 3-month treasuries, all support a Fed pivot sooner rather than later.
Well, it's also going to be another busy week for earnings, Amy, with more than a third of the companies in the S&P 500 reporting. The story from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
With more than 260 S&P companies reporting so far, about 71% have delivered positive earnings surprises, despite some notable technology misses. Emily Hill is founding partner at Bowersock Capital Partners.
You know, yes, some earnings are exceeding this reasonably low bar, but overall, we have slowing growth. And I think what we're going to see is more of what we just saw from big tech. And in the first quarter of next year, we're going to see the impact of the strong dollar, rising interest rates, even more than we have now.
In addition to the healthcare giants, this week we will hear from AMD, Airbnb, ConocoPhillips, Starbucks, Uber, and Yum Brands. In New York, Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Charlie. And in Europe, shares of Barclays are 1.7% higher. Trading revenue rose a greater than expected 45%. This gain, driven by fixed income, commodities, and currencies trading, excludes some hedging losses tied to its mistakenly issued securities earlier this year. In his first TV interview since taking on the top job, Chief Executive Officer C.S. Venkatakrishnan spoke about the UK economy with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix.
What I'm hoping you see is what people will call a soft landing and a shallow recession, helped by the initial conditions, And so what you might see is an increase in unemployment. You might see some credit weakness among customers, but it won't be so bad that you see distress in society.
We'll bring you more of our conversation with Chief Executive Officer CS Venkatakrishnan a little later in the program.
Well, another major story we're following this morning, Amy, takes place in Brazil. It is a dramatic comeback for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. The left-wing politician has won the presidential election, narrowly defeating incumbent Jair Bolsonaro. 3 years ago, Lula was in a jail cell on corruption charges. Juan Pablo Spinetto is Bloomberg's managing editor for economy and government in Latin America.
I mean, less than 3 years ago, he was still in jail. So if we talk about perspective, this is probably one of the greatest political comebacks I saw in my life. Lula was president for 8 years at the beginning of the century. He was one of the most popular politicians on earth. At some point when Barack Obama was president, he called him the guy, right? The most important and most popular president.
Bloomberg managing editor Juan Pablo Spinetto says Bolsonaro has neither conceded the race nor commented on the results.
And in other political news this morning, Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi criticized U.S. export curbs in a call with Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Wang's comments about export controls were an apparent reference to Washington's move earlier this month to restrict Chinese access to chip-making technology.
On the economic front in Asia, Amy, China's factory and services activity contracted in October. Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Brian Curtis has more from Hong Kong.
The downshift suggests that COVID curbs and the property crisis are taking a toll. The official PMI fell to 49.2 from 50.1 in September and below estimates. The non-manufacturing PMI dropped to 48.7 from 50.6 and also below estimates. Bloomberg Economics says as bad as these numbers are, they probably understate the true weakness. New export orders slumped all the way to 47.6 and non-manufacturing employment dropped to 46.1. In Hong Kong, Brian Curtis, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Brian, thanks. S&P futures now down 20 points, Dow futures down 149, and NASDAQ futures are lower by 79 points. Straight ahead, your latest local headlines and a check of sports. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. It's 6:07 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to find out what else is going on in New York and around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. We're learning more information about the attack on Paul Pelosi, the husband of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. It is said the suspect allegedly had a bag full of zip ties along with a hammer he brought to Pelosi's San Francisco home. The suspect, David DePop, will officially be charged today and arraigned tomorrow. Pelosi is the latest in a growing wave of threats and plots against elected officials. On Face the Nation, Margaret Brennan asked Tom Emmer, congressman and chairman of the National Republican Congressional Committee, about a tweet he had posted several days ago of him touting the Second Amendment, firing a gun with the hashtag #FirePelosi.
Why is there a gun in a political ad at all?
Well, now,
wouldn't a pink slip be more fitting if it's about firing her?
Exercising our Second Amendment rights, having
fun. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Yep. That's not a debate about the Second Amendment. Hashtag fire Pelosi.
Yes, it is.
Emmer said there is no place for violence in our society. Face the Nation can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. At least 153 people were killed and dozens injured following a crowd crush during Halloween celebrations in Seoul, marking one of the deadliest incidents in South Korea in years. Bloomberg's Sohee Kim has more from Seoul.
Most of the victims were young people, those who were in their 20s, and women who couldn't endure the pressure they got from the crowd crush.
Bloomberg's Sohee Kim from Seoul. President Yoon Suk-yeol declared a period of national mourning and vowed to carry out a thorough investigation. Republican Governor Brian Kemp and Democrat Stacey Abrams squared off Sunday night in Georgia's governor race. Governor Kemp praised the state's economy.
Thankfully in Georgia, because we were open even when Ms. Abrams didn't want us to be, our economy has been incredibly resilient. We've had two record years for economic development.
Meanwhile, Abrams during the debate promised voters she will not reduce taxes for the rich.
As governor, I will not only lower costs, I will put more money into the pockets of working Georgians, of middle class Georgians. But what I will not do is give tax cuts to the wealthy and the powerful.
The Abrams-Kemp debate aired on WSB. Drivers, look out for little trick-or-treaters in the tri-state area. It's Halloween. Meanwhile, for the adults, the annual Halloween parade returns to Greenwich Village tonight. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts from more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Amy.
All right, thank you, Michael. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the sports report brought to you by Tri-State Audi. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy, it was an awfully nice month of October for the Jets and Giants. Both were hoping to cap it with a fifth win in a row. Both saw their winning streaks come to an end. Jets led the Patriots at halftime, but the Pats scored 19 points in a row, beat the Jets for the 13th consecutive time, 22-17 at MetLife. Not a good day for Zach Wilson. Between a couple of touchdown passes, he threw three interceptions. One was a pass he was just trying to throw away. There was a costly Jet penalty in the first half, a roughing the passer that wiped out an 80-yard pick six. The Jets fall to 5-3. The Giants in Seattle, the game was tied at 7, then 10, then 13 in the fourth quarter.
Gino going to throw again. On first down, pump fake, going to throw deep, got a man in the corner, he didn't block it, touchdown, Seahawks! What a drive led by Geno Smith! Tyler Lockett was not going to let this one get away.
Cairo had the call. Tyler Lockett had dropped a TD pass earlier, also had a fumble that led to the Giants' only TD. Seattle scored again 4 minutes later. Seahawks won 27-13. Richie James was a Giants' goat. He fumbled punts in both halves, and both led to Seattle scores. Giants are 6-2, off next week. Knicks got a good look at the guy they were trying to acquire in the offseason in Cleveland. Donovan Mitchell scored 38 points, made 8 three-pointers, had 12 assists. Cavs rallied to win 121-108. Rangers on a Mika Zibanejad had power play goal, 7 minutes left. Won 3-2 at Arizona. Devils routed Columbus 7-1. The World Series now in Philadelphia. Astros and Phillies 1-1 going to tonight's Game 3. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports, Amy.
Thank you, John. Futures are lower. S&P futures down 20. Dow futures down 146 points. NASDAQ futures down 79 points. 10-year Treasury down 11/32. The yield 4.06%. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today, or visit AudiOffers.com for more information.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are moving lower this morning. We have S&P futures down 20 points. Dow futures down 149. NASDAQ futures are lower by 82 points. We check the markets every 15 minutes during the trading day on Bloomberg. 10-year Treasury is down 11/32. The yield 4.06%. Yield on the 2-year 4.48. NYMEX crude is down 1.4%, down $1.25 at $86.64 a barrel. COMEX gold down 0.3% or $4.60 at $16.40.20 an ounce. The euro 0.9932 against the dollar. British pound 1.1547. The yen is at 148.46. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Nathan, thank you very much. Brazilians have delivered a very tight victory to Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva in their presidential election. It gives the leftist former president another shot at power in a rejection of incumbent Jair Bolsonaro's far-right politics. In the NFL, the Giants lost. Patriots beat the Jets. The Commanders and 49ers won. NBA, Knicks lost. Celtics beat the Wizards. The Warriors lost. Devils and Rangers won in hockey. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 6:18 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Former Barclays Market Chief C.S. Venkatakrishnan is now CEO of the storied UK bank. He took over the top job after the abrupt departure of its former chief executive. So now, a year into the job, Venkat is leading Barclays through a war in Ukraine, rampant inflation, and aggressive central bank tightening. In his first TV interview since taking the helm, Venkat spoke exclusively to Bloomberg's Francine Lacqua.
I think the UK economy has had a lot of support during COVID, and obviously there are, you know, the UK has been growing more slowly than it should. But the financial services industry, which is a large part of the UK, is very competitive. But it's not the only one. Health sciences, even technology and parts of technology, fintech, are very, very bright stars in the UK. So the UK has a lot going for it, and I don't think you will see that kind of environment. I think what I'm hoping you see is what people will call a soft landing and a shallow recession, helped by the initial conditions. And so what you might see is an increase in unemployment. You might see some credit weakness among customers, but it won't be so bad that you see distress in society. However, it has to be managed carefully, and it has to be managed aggressively with a balancing of the budget, and that's what the Prime Minister has said in the last couple of days.
Are you expecting a housing crash?
I doubt it.
Talk to me a little bit about the last 6 weeks. So you mentioned the guilt. I mean, was there a moment where you were in the office thinking, like, as Barclays, you're one of course, the players in selling and buying gilts, with the margin calls coming in and saying, like, I don't know what happens in the next 2 hours.
So first of all, I think the volatility was managed extremely well by the very effective, targeted, and time-bound actions of the Bank of England. So I think buying gilts, buying inflation-linked gilts, and then the repo facility that they put in, working with the banking system, all helped ease the pressure in the crisis. And, you know, you've got 10-year gilt yields now back below where they were at the day of the mini-budget on the 23rd of September. As for us, I mean, we are large in the gilts market. What was important for us, as we saw it, was this was not a solvency issue at all for the pension system. It was a liquidity issue. And it was a liquidity issue because what was a very important feature of the UK pension system, which, by the way, I think is a good feature of the pension system, which is a matching of assets and liabilities, which employed leverage, created a liquidity problem. So a liquidity problem had to be managed.
Is liquidity the biggest concern for banks right now? I mean, we're again hearing, you know, the U.S. Treasury Secretary having to do things maybe to put a bit of extra liquidity or to pad it out in the Treasury market.
Bank liquidity, I don't think, is an issue. We've had liquidity regimes. Funding models are much, much more robust than they were in the financial crisis. I think part of what people are worried about and what they saw in the gilt market was the liquidity in underlying trading, which is that these markets are not deep with small bid offers in large sizes of trades as they used to be 15 years ago. And I think part of it, our banks are more prudent in managing their risk.
What's your relationship like with the new UK government? Have you had calls? Have they given you assurance about windfall taxes?
Well, I think the government is brand new. So we obviously, many of the faces are very familiar faces. And we've been, in communication with them for many years, and we always are with the government. And we await to see their proposals on taxation, on fiscal policy, on all aspects of it.
Where do you see the City of London being in 4 or 5 years? I mean, that's maybe too long a time frame. Should I say 12 months?
Well, it's both too long and too short. You know, here we are in the city, and this city has been the center of finance for 300 years. And it needs to be the center of finance for 300 more years. We certainly would wish that that were the case. And it is the center of finance because of an excellent regulatory system, transparent, fair. It is there because of great availability of talent and infrastructure, soft financial infrastructure and hard financial infrastructure. And a part of that is also a stable, predictable taxation regime. So we hope that all those elements and ingredients remain and continue to allow the city to flourish. And, you know, the Prime Minister spoke about investing in education in Britain. And if you think about what drives the financial sector, I mean, you meet many of them. It's about the wonderfully trained people in the UK and the wonderfully trained people outside who are able to come and work in the UK.
I mean, the UK has lost something, or the City of London has lost business to other parts of the world in terms of, you know, financial capitals.
Yes.
What do you need from the government today for that to be reversed?
Well, some of it is what others do, right? So once Brexit happened and you could not passport financial services to London, all the major banks had to set up trading enterprises in Europe. So that is irreversible, let's say, for the time being. I think other than that, what we need is a continuation of what London has provided. You know, education, infrastructure, people, a great regulatory regime, and a stable and predictable, you know, fiscal regime.
Krishnan speaking with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix. You can catch that full interview on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. Futures are lower. S&P futures down 20. Dow futures down 145 points. NASDAQ futures down 76. The 10-year Treasury down 11 32nds. 10-year yield at 4.05%. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg 1130 weather, mostly cloudy today, going up to 65 degrees with scattered showers tonight, down to 55 and back up to 70 tomorrow with showers early in the morning and mostly cloudy skies tomorrow afternoon.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 99.1 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good Monday morning. I'm Amy Morris.
And I'm Nathan Hager. We're about 3 hours away from the open of U.S. trading. Time for the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Interactive Brokers charges margin loan rates from 3.58 to 4.58%. Rates subject to change. Learn more at ibkr.com/compare. Up first, U.S. futures are lower to start the morning, but stocks enter this last day of the trading month in rally mode. The S&P 500's gained almost 9% in October, while the Dow has surged more than 14%. Phil Orlando, chief equity strategist at Federated Hermes, thinks we are still in for a bumpy road ahead.
There's been this perception among the market. We've seen this from that big rally mid-June and mid-August, and then this rally over the last couple of weeks, this perception that there'll be this immaculate decline in inflation, which is going to allow the Federal Reserve to stop hiking interest rates and turn around and start cutting interest rates. We are not that sanguine. It's going to be a problem longer than the market thinks.
Phil Orlando with Federated Hermes is still positioning defensively as the Fed continues to tighten monetary policy.
And we're watching a couple of key events this week. The Fed makes an interest rate decision on Wednesday, and the government issues its monthly employment report on Friday. Katrina L. is a senior economist with Moody's Analytics.
We have seen that the U.S. economy is still kind of, you know, roaring ahead, but momentum has definitely slowed. And I think what the Fed is really going to continue to focus on is the strength of the labor market. And while we have seen some softening in the labor market, it's still tight beyond comfort levels.
Katrina L. with Moody's says she expects the Fed to raise rates another 75 basis points this week before easing in the coming months. Stick with us all week for the latest Fed coverage. We'll bring you Chair Jay Powell's full comments live Wednesday on Bloomberg Radio and Television.
Over in Europe, Amy, shares of Barclays are up almost 1%. Trading revenue rose more than expected thanks to fixed income, commodities, and currencies trading. In his first broadcast interview since taking the top job, CEO C.S. Venkatakrishnan spoke about the U.K. economy with Bloomberg's Francine Lacroix.
What you might see is an increase in unemployment. You might see some credit weakness among customers, but it won't be so bad that you see distress in society. However, it has to be managed carefully, and it has to be managed aggressively with a balancing of the budget, and that's what the Prime Minister has said in the last couple of days.
Catch our full interview with Barclays CEO on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal.
A dramatic comeback in Brazil for former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, the left-wing politician winning the presidential election, narrowly defeating incumbent Jair Bolsonaro.
That's the five things you need to know to start your day, brought to you by Interactive Brokers. And this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Nathan. 6:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in New York and around the world.
Thank you very much, Amy. The mayor of Ukraine's capital said that 80% of consumers in Kyiv were left without water supplies due to the damage to a power facility near the city from Russian military strikes today. Mayor Vitaly Klitschko says local authorities are working on restoring the supplies as soon as possible, telling Kyiv residents in the meantime to stock up on water from the nearest pump rooms and points of sale. The barrage of Russian strikes hit critical infrastructure facilities in Kyiv and other Ukrainian cities. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol has promised a full investigation and support for those affected after a crowd crush in Seoul killed more than 150 people. Bloomberg's So-hee Kim reports from Seoul.
There were tens of thousands of people packed in a narrow alley on a hill, and suddenly it went out of control, as people described, as they were falling like dominoes.
Bloomberg's Sohee Kim in Seoul. The man accused of attacking Paul Pelosi, the husband of Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, is expected in court today to face attempted murder and other charges. Investigators are examining 42-year-old David DePopp's social media pages, which allegedly include false conspiracy theories about the 2020 election. There's word DePopp had zip ties and duct tape in his bags Friday when he allegedly broke into the Pelosi's San Francisco home. There are calls this morning for the United Nations to broker the resumption of wheat exports from Ukraine. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Russia is blocking the departure of any ships carrying wheat out of Ukraine, saying that drone strikes are originating off the ships. President Joe Biden says very concerning.
Truly outrageous. There's been increased starvation. There's no reason for them to do that. But they're always looking for some rationale to be able to say the reason they're doing something outrageous is because the West made them do it.
Ukraine says 218 ships in total have been blocked. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Donald Trump's company, the Trump Organization, is on trial this week for criminal tax fraud. Opening statements and the first witnesses are expected today in New York. Among the key prosecution witnesses, Trump's longtime finance chief, Alan Weisselberg. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts, more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. 6:36 on Wall Street. Time now for the sports report brought to you by Tri-State Audi. Here's John Stashower.
Thanks, Amy. Geno Smith was a high draft pick of the Jets, spent 1 year with the Giants, mostly as a backup quarterback. That's been his role almost his entire career. But Seattle traded the unhappy Russell Wilson, gave the job to Smith, and he's been sensational. Leads the NFL in completion percentage, led the Seahawks to a 27-13 win over the Giants. Smith was asked about beating his old team.
I spent 1 year with the Giants. And so that year to me was like a blur. And, you know, my life has moved on from then. I don't have any remorse towards anyone there. In fact, you know, this to me, this game was for Ben McAdoo and Jerry Reese. They believed in me. And so as far as, you know, any other thing, I don't really care for it. You know, I'm happy to be here in Seattle.
McAdoo and Reese were the Giants coach and GM back in 2017. Giants offense struggled. The only touchdown was due to a Seattle fumble at their own 2-yard line. Quiet day for Saquon Barkley, a season low. 62 yards from scrimmage. Giants, 4-game win streak ends. They go to the bye week 6-2, tied for second with Dallas, and Philadelphia won again. The Eagles are 7-0. The Jets also had their 4-game win streak end. Their losing streak versus New England grew to 13. The Patriots won at MetLife 22-17. Zach Wilson threw 3 interceptions. Bill Belichick now the second winningest coach in NFL history, trailing only Don Shula. The Jets next week have to play Buffalo. The Bills last night sent Green Bay to a fourth loss in a row. Knicks blew a lead, lost in Cleveland 121-108 as the Cavs won the fourth quarter 32-15. Donovan Mitchell scored 38 against the Knicks, who of course tried to acquire him in the offseason. Rangers won 3-2 at Arizona. Devils all over Columbus 7-1. The Astros and Phillies tied at 1. Play game 3 of the World Series tonight. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports, Amy.
All right. Thank you, John. It is 6:37 on Wall Street. Time to take a look at stocks and some of the names that are moving in the pre-market. And for that, we're joined by Bloomberg's Danny Berger. Danny, it is a pleasure. Thanks for joining us this morning. What you got for us?
Well, starting off with chip stocks, and look, they've been under pressure really, I don't know, over the past 2 years, but every little incremental news we get does seem to be a little bit more painful for them. So the latest comes out of China with Foxconn. They're, of course, the main manufacturer for Apple, and they're trying to look at alternative sites to start production because of the disruption that's happening in Chinese plants. So what does that do with U.S. stocks? A lot of these U.S. chip makers are under pressure because of that this morning. Again, just another piece of news of the supply chain issues facing companies who have to deal with the COVID-19 fallout in China, specifically tech and chip makers. So AMD, for example, that's falling more than 1% pre-market, as is NVIDIA at this moment.
And let's turn our attention now to Emerson Electric. What's going on?
So, yeah, it's one of these big industrial companies, and this is from a Wall Street Journal story that Blackstone, the private equity giant, is going to be buying a 55% stake in their climate tech business. So this is things like compressors, residential and commercial heating and cooling. One of the interesting things about this deal versus, you know, just the deal itself is that usually what happens is banks provide the debt financing from this. But banks have really pulled back from that. They don't really want to take on a risk. So interestingly, Blackstone is placing the debt itself, selling it off to direct lenders. So even just the shape of this deal is pretty interesting. But for Emerson, it does mean a boost to their shares. They also reported earnings this morning that beat expectations. So that plus getting a little bit of funding from this Blackstone deal, helping them move 1 1/3% in the pre-market trading.
And Danny, there looks to be a great big deal with Thermo Fisher. I mean, this looks huge.
Yeah, and I should say one of the things interesting about this is it's a deal for a UK asset. So it's buying a UK diagnostic firm for $2 billion. It's buying this off of a private equity firm, Nordic Capital. And so yes, this is a sizable deal for them, but one, it reflects just how active deal making in healthcare has been, but also it's this theme. I'm based here in London. Something we've been following is because of a strong dollar and a weaker pound, we continue to see U.S. companies interested in U.K. deals. So this is yet another one adding to evidence that perhaps the U.K. is on sale, I guess you could say. So yeah, Thermo Fisher taking advantage of that.
All right. Thanks so much, Bloomberg Television anchor and market drivers host Danny Berger. Always a pleasure. Thank you for bringing us your insights and letting us know what some of the names are that are moving in the pre-market. Thank you for joining us. Looking at stocks as a whole ahead of the open, futures are lower. S&P futures down 21 points. Dow futures down 154 points. NASDAQ futures down 79, 10-year Treasury down 10 32nds, the yield at 4.05%. Much more still to come on this Monday morning edition of Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. The Bloomberg Sports Report was brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit your local Tri-State Audi dealer. Get behind the wheel of yours today or visit AudiOffers.com for more information.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
I'm Nathan Hager. Futures are moving lower ahead of a very busy week for earnings and central banks. Let's head right over to the First Word Breaking News desk for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Good morning, Bill.
And good morning, Nathan. That's right. U.S. futures are lower after Friday's surge, with Dow futures down 161 points, S&P's dropped 22, and NASDAQ futures decline by 86. The U.S. 10-year yield at 4.06%. Gold is down 8. Oil is in the red, and Bitcoin is trading little changed. Japan rose 1.8% overnight, while European markets are quiet this morning. And back in the U.S. on the economic front at 9:45, Chicago PMI, and at 10:30, the Dallas Fed. Regarding earnings this morning, Emerson Electric EPS beat estimates. And in deal news, Thermo Fisher said to be near a deal for $2.3 billion for UK's binding site. In other news, The Verge reported that Twitter plans to charge $19.99 per month for new Twitter Blue. And wrapping things up, Gilead was raised to equate over at Barclays. AMD was cut to market perform over at BMO. Live from the First of Breaking News desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Nathan?
All right, Bill, thanks. To get more live breaking news on your Bloomberg, type Squawk on the terminal, S-Q-U-A, go. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. And now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Brazil's Lula da Silva edged out Jair Bolsonaro 50.9% to 49.1% to win the presidency. Bolsonaro hasn't conceded or commented. The Supreme Court revisits the issue of affirmative action today. The case before the court will focus on admission policies at the University of North Carolina and at Harvard. In the NFL, the Giants lost. The Patriots beat the Jets 22-17. The Commanders and 49ers won. In the NBA, the Knicks lost. The Celtics beat the Wizards 112-94. The Warriors lost. In hockey, the Devils and Rangers won. Game 3 of the World Series is tonight in Philadelphia. The Astros and Phillies are so far even at a game apiece. Global news, 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr, and this is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 6:49 on Wall Street. Let's turn to news in science and technology now. The Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report is brought to you by New Jersey Institute of Technology. Ranked a top 100 national university by U.S. News and World Report and number 14 in the nation on Money's Best Colleges list. Learn more at njit.edu. Now here's what's making news in science, technology, engineering, and math. Elon Musk is preparing for a round of job cuts at Twitter. Bloomberg News has learned the company's new owner has asked managers to drop lists of team members who could be let go. Musk has denied reports he plans to get rid of 75% of Twitter's 7,500 employees. Challenges are mounting for Hong Kong's major financial summit this week, with three top executives pulling out and a tropical cyclone approaching. The latest to miss the summit is Blackstone President Jonathan Gray, who contracted COVID. And China has launched the third and final module to complete its permanent space station, realizing more than a decade-long endeavor to maintain a constant crewed presence in orbit. Meng Tian joins Wen Tian as the second laboratory module for the station. Meng Tian weighs in at about 20 tons. It will provide space for science experiments in zero gravity, an airlock for exposure to the vacuum of space, and a small robotic arm to support extravehicular payloads. That's the Bloomberg NJIT STEM Report. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Nathan. And we are live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. It is 6:51 on Wall Street. Time now to check what's going on in D.C. Some of our top stories in the nation's capital include the reaction to the attack on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband. We're going to get the very latest. President Biden casting his midterm ballot before the final campaign stretch. And we're going to take a look at the U.S. relationship with Brazil after Lula da Silva's election. We want to get more on these stories from Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins. She joins us now. Emily, good Monday morning to you. Let's start with Nancy Pelosi, that attack on her husband just a few days ago. Lawmakers have been voicing concerns about security for weeks now. How does this change the picture?
Oh, I mean, Amy, that it's weeks, it's months. It's really since January 6th of 2021. You saw a lot of increased threats on lawmakers, on their lives. And you have seen a number of cases like progressive Pramila Jayapal, as well as Republican Senator Susan Collins report that there were various attacks and attempts on their life. And you have seen that some response within the Capitol Hill community this past summer. The Sergeant of Arms told lawmakers that they could get up to $10,000 to help bolster their personal homes, install security cameras, make sure they have shatterproof windows, various measures like that. But clearly what we saw in the case of Pelosi is that it just wasn't enough. And it really reawakened a lot of these fears that with 535 members of Congress plus the delegates, it feels like it's only really a matter of time before something truly tragic happens. We saw this way back at the start of the year with start of the decade, really, with Gabrielle Giffords being shot. We had the shooting that hit Steve Scalise in the leg. And every time there are calls to do more, but it really seems like in the last 2 years, we've seen more of a ramping up and a ramping up of threats onto lawmakers. And I think there's still a question of what exactly is going to be done at this point, if we are going to see more support for lawmakers in the upcoming year-end spending bill, perhaps, if there are going to be more security measures. But I think is from the response you've seen from lawmakers, there's also an acknowledgement that we are living in very partisan, very divided times right now in the U.S. And that atmosphere is really going to have to change before some of these threats begin to die down.
Yeah, I wanted to ask just one more question about that, because as partisan as it is, it does seem like the lawmakers can agree that there's no place for violence in these politics. Do you anticipate seeing something move on the House floor, on the Senate floor, on Capitol Hill at all?
It's the potential. At this point, most lawmakers are pretty focused on the election, so there isn't too much chat on legislation. But I think there's also a lot of calls that, you know, there needs to be more civility. You've seen a number of Republicans come out and condemn violence, but you've also seen some continue. Republican Congressman Clay Higgins promoted a conspiracy theory about Pelosi and about who the person who attacked their home was. Certainly things like that, you know, they don't go to cool partisan tensions.
Now, this is all happening just days before the midterm elections, Emily, and we already know that President Biden has cast his ballot. What are you seeing from the polls? What are you hearing?
So the polls just show an incredibly tight race. The boost that we saw from Democrats over the summer has basically vanished at this point. A number of races where Biden won the district by 10 points, won the district by 20 points, have now become competitive races where Republicans are spending money in. And so it doesn't look good for Democrats. Certainly, their chances of holding on to the House at this point, according to the polling, seem very, very slim. Republicans are likely to pick up probably between a dozen and 25 different seats, according to what we've seen from some analysts out there. And in the Senate, the races where Democrats really needed to hold on to seats, like in Nevada and Georgia, where they needed to flip seats, like in Pennsylvania, all of those races are becoming so much tighter and closer for them. So there's a real question, too, as to what's going to happen in the Senate chamber. We could easily be seeing a government next year that has Republicans controlling both branches of both chambers of Congress, rather, and then have Biden in the White House.
Are there any particular races that you're keeping your eye on, Emily?
Oh, man, a lot. There are a number of really interesting ones. I was, of course, in Nevada the other week, and so I'm keeping my eye on the three House races there. It's interesting because usually when you look at large metropolitan areas, there's maybe one or two competitive races. It's interesting to see three competitive races in one city, and so I think that might be a really good bellwether as to how things go, particularly because Nevada has been hard hit by the economy, and that's really the number one issue for voters this election. As much as Democrats are talking about abortion and January 6th and how much that matters to a lot of their base voters, inflation really has continued to be the number one issue across the board. And so I think I'll go ahead and say the Nevada races should really tell us a lot come election night.
And we're going to be watching the turnout as well, especially with the early voting and the mail-in ballots. That's going to also tell the tale. And I wanted to shift to more global politics now. President Biden has already congratulated Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva on his election win in Brazil. I want to ask you what we can figure this would mean for U.S. relations with Brazil.
Well, they'll probably get a little bit warmer. Of course, the current president, Bolsonaro, he was an ally of former President Trump. He never recognized Biden's 2020 election victory and continued to question it when he did meet Biden. Obviously, that didn't really endear him to Biden. And so you have Da Silva, who is probably a little bit more friendly to Biden, friendly to Biden's policies, listening to the speech that he made last night. He echoed a lot of themes that we've actually kind of heard from Biden, this putting aside partisanship, this working to rebuild Brazil to make it better again. And so that was things that we're hearing from him, and it kind of signals that he and Biden might wind up being a little bit closer of allies.
All right. Bloomberg government reporter Emily Wilkins, thank you very much. Always a pleasure. And you can read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. And a reminder, follow all of the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington, Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. Futures lower. S&P futures down 21. Dow futures down 149. NASDAQ futures down 83. The 10-year Treasury down 7/32. The yield at 4.04%. Bloomberg Surveillance with Lisa Abramowitz and Jonathan Farrow coming up next, along with Nathan Hager. I'm Amy Morris. This is Bloomberg.